Welcome to Miracle Nutrition with Hardy White. I'm Hardy White. You know how you can tell ahead of time when the show ran long? Well, I'll tell you. The Queen of Hearts, she made some tarts because she was wanting some. The Knave of Hearts, he stole those tarts because he also wanted some. The Queen of Hearts, she said, come on now, bring those tarts right back. The Knave said, I don't have those tarts. She said, quit talking back. He said, I ate those tarts already, or I would return them now. She said, don't steal them anymore, and thou shalt take then a vow. Now that's me reciting the Queen of Hearts from memory. This is a old nursery rhyme, I believe, was originally written in the 18th century. That means 17-something. It's confusing to all you younger people who don't have real school anymore. But it was written in the 17-somethings, all right? And back when they'd make the letter S was also the letter F. So it's very confusing. But they knew. Say, well, why would that word be, you know, there's no word for storm. So it's got to be storm or something like that. They'd know. Anyway, well, I was thinking about that poem, The Queen of Hearts, which really goes like this. The Queen of Hearts, she made some tarts, all on a summer's day. The Knave of Hearts, he stole those tarts, and he took them clean away. The King of Hearts called for the tarts and beat the Knave full sore. The Knave of Hearts brought back the tarts and vowed he'd steal no more. Oh, what a compelling story. And this is, I think, oh, I need to tell this to a small child. Who wouldn't enjoy this more than maybe even a little one learning the language for the first time? What's a knave? Oh, that's like a knight. Why are you calling it that? I don't know. Also, I'd like to introduce you to cards. Cards are wonderful, and they're such a metaphor for things. Like what? I don't know. We're going to explore that today. We're going to talk about cards, houses of cards, suits of cards, all that kind of things. Card game, but mostly being ruled over by the royalty that lives on the card or in the card. Now, we have seen them animated in such fiction as Alice confronts the playing cards. It's not the first one. I think the first one she deals with chess. And then she goes on and she says, oh, you cantankerous players of whist. And they're really giant cards, and the queen's a real queen. And then I think there's some other comment, anti-royalist game, that I don't know whether they don't get to the ones that are egalitarian, like Go or whatever. But maybe Chinese chess, that's a thing. But the one with the elephant pieces and the cannon. Now, there are more verses to the Queen of Hearts poem that are not popular, have not remained in the public consciousness or in the culture. So the Queen of Hearts one has found itself republished many, many times in children's nursery rhyme books. Because again, you know, beating someone for stealing pastry is such a kid thing. So there are more verses, of course, because there's more cards, playing cards. Now, not every single card gets its own poem, and I'm sure it does if you searched on the internet, because poets run out of things to write about, and really did hundreds of years ago, but they kept going. Bless them. And we still have alchemists also, but I'm going to recite them dramatically for you now. So the next verse goes like this. Now, I'm not making this up. There's nothing worse, is there? I'm so incredibly clever that I've written a sequel to The Queen of Hearts. I would never do that, and I would never. Here's some sequels to nursery rhymes, please. That's what we call toilet literature, things that you might buy and read on the toilet. Clever limericks or something. Bless you, I mean, they have a place. But this isn't. This is history. These are real. This was published in some kind of periodical. They had them in the 18th centuries? I don't know. The only thing I could find was a facsimile of the original thing, again, with the F's were S's, so I had to really think, you know, is it snubs or fnubs? So here we go. This is the next verse. The king of spades, he kissed the maids, which vexed the queen full sore. The queen of spades, she beat those maids and turned them out of door. The knave of spades grieved for those jades and did for them implore. The queen so gent, she did relent and vowed she'd ne'er strike more. So in this one, the king of spades is kissing maids, I guess like maidens, maybe not literal maids, I don't know, housekeeping. King, stop kissing the housekeepers. I think it's more than that. You know, this is, it's horrible. What's going on in this is horrible. But the knave of spades grieved for the jades that were being beaten by the queen. So they're both, poor people were being really mistreated. I guess it's the lower numbered cards. I really don't know. The next verse goes like this. The king of clubs, he often drubs his loving queen and wife. The queen of clubs returns him snubs, and all is noise and strife. The knave of clubs gives winks and rubs and swears he'll take her part. For when our kings will do such things, they should be made to smart. I like that one. That's very political. I say, you know, if you're violent like that, you should be made to smart. You should pay the price. Our kings can't get away with that. And if you lead with that king suit, I'm going to try to relate all this to spades or other whist adjacent games. Trick taking. Isn't that a wonderful thing? Well, we're not going to go into details and cards and everything like that. And I remember being so baffled by the bridge column in the newspaper. There was in the newspaper, right there embedded among the funnies and the horoscope, was a column. A little editorial or something about a bridge. And they'd have some imaginary bridge moves, east, west, north. And what they were bidding and all that kind of stuff. And it was written by Dr. Zhivago, I think his name was. It was Omar Sharif. The actor? Yes. Omar Sharif wrote a bridge column. All the elderly are going, I know this is not news. No, it's not news, but I don't think they have it anymore because they don't have Omar Sharif anymore. Nor do they have horoscope writer and astrologer. Sidney Omar. So Omar has that name, whether no matter how many R's it has in it or whatever, it has a long, rich history on the funny pages. So there's Omar McKenzie. Remember, he used to draw Punicky. And that was a strip that ran, never, didn't run. That didn't happen. But not everything has to happen. Here's the last verse. The Diamond King, I fain would sing, and likewise his fair queen. But the knave, a haughty slave, must needs sleep in between. Good Diamond King, with hempen string this haughty knave destroy. Then may your queen with, what is that, with something serene, your royal bed enjoy. With mind serene, I made a typo, and it says mound. And I know that's not true. With mind serene, a serene mind. That's how you enjoy the royal bed. Is you must have a serene mind. I wonder if any modern day royals have a serene mind and can enjoy the royal bed, which I imagine has sheets with an impossibly high thread count. It's in the tens of millions. Is that possible? Yes. They're using now, the royals are using now, and other fabulously wealthy people around the globe, nano silk, or silk woven by nano worms, and it's so fine. It's impossibly fine. And the sheets You get into the bed, and the walls have to be padded because they're so smooth that you get into the bed and you swoosh. It's like stepping on ice. You can slam yourself into the wall because there's zero friction almost. Isn't that something? And if you paint them like, what's it called, like Nardo Black or something, then you can't see them either. And it's just black. They call them black ice, and they're the most expensive sheets in the world. And they're very comfortable. Oh, being royalty is wonderful. I hope there's not... Here's a reason I hope there's not reincarnation. Because if there is, then there's some odd justice behind it. And I don't want to be... If someone say to me, you know, I'm complaining about my life. Let's say I'm suppressive. And they go, yes, but you used to be a king. And you go, no. So never again? Yeah, you did it that once. I have no memory of it. Well, I'm sorry. You know, that's no good. That's the thing about bearing any kind of karmic responsibility for a life I don't remember. That doesn't seem fair. I don't remember the stuff I did early on in this one. I'm thinking about it the other day. I'm thinking, was I, you know, a good person in elementary school? I don't even know what that is, really. But I know that there's some things that could sway that tendency. And I've talked about when I was on the safety patrol, which I always felt like was some kind of pity appointment. You know, I've seen that kind of the screw up kids don't, the kids who can't pay attention are unrepresented on this. And then they pick me. Because the other ones, they would like, they had the, I remember the two smartest kids in the class were, gosh, I remembered their names for a long time. I think it was like Gwen and Denise or something. And they were like the officers. And then everybody else, like my friend Bruce, was just like a normal officer. And then I was some kind of like sub-officer. Some people got an orange bandolero with a badge, and mine didn't have any badge, I don't think. I think mine said like trainee, or what is it, private before you get your stripe, that kind of thing. Private not yet, you know, trainee, but still with a little bit of authority, you know. You can still say, hey, that's not how you get onto a school bus. No one listens to you. I'm not even sure what you're there for. Are you there to tattle? Or to scream for help, like if a child's completely incapacitated. I'd never really read that. I felt like probably they explained it to us. And again, my tiny little attention span. By the time I just was fixated on the costume, I go, I hope there's a hat. And I think there might have been a hat for school bus. Or somebody got to wear a helmet maybe even. That would have been lovely. I really crave that kind of inclusion when as a child say, oh, I want a uniform. I want everybody who has more power than me to love me. I want the king to like me. Maybe I have to be a fool. Or maybe the king will respect me if I make the king's enemies my enemies. Now, in the game of cards, how does that translate? Well, let me tell you, all the suits, all the cards have a point value, but it changes depending on what game you're playing. So a low-numbered card might be valued in some games, and a high-numbered one might be detrimental. Like, let's say you're trying to avoid accumulating a lot of points than the ones that have the most. And then there's the ace. Is the ace 1 or 11? Is it the most or is it the least? And isn't God that way in our lives? Is God 1 or is God a power that goes to 11? Like the amplifier of a heavy metal parodist. Did I say that correctly? Oh my goodness. I don't mind speaking about these difficult things like card games. And I find it strange that this object of leisure has on it a depiction of our oppressors. And you say, well, they're not my oppressors. King and queens can be Can't they be good? Well, yeah, like if they have, if the word burger is also in their name, or mattress, even, you know, then I think it's okay. You pass a store and it says, you know, Appliance King. He's probably all right, you know. I wouldn't mind that at all. Something dinged in the background. That's so modern. I didn't even know there was any kind of ding on. I hope nobody heard that. I think they did. I don't have the ding featured. I'm getting to the age where I don't know how to turn off the dings. My mother's, every time I go somewhere with my mother, her phone goes, you know, I go, what is it doing? She goes, I don't know. And we drop it and everything. But that's because she's elderly. So every time she goes to the phone store, she gets targeted for exploitation. And they are terrible about it. They do not care. And they upsell her stuff she doesn't need. And it upsets me. But I realize, hey, that's the way that our society works, is that the weaker you get and the more vulnerable, watch out. Watch out. Hold on to your wallet, because there's lots of knaves of hearts or whatever out there. I'm going to get you, steal your tarts. No, I don't like it like that. And so what I do is I tend to make up my own card games. So this is a, it all depends whether you value. So let's say you're playing a serious game of cards and somebody hands you like the King of Spades or something. And maybe you need it. Now at that time right there, that card is very valuable to you. You see, if I play this card right now and I've received it in a game at Las Vegas in a poker thing, or maybe it's Baccarat or something. I don't know that. I had to play Baccarat. It's got a sum to 7 or something, or 9. But anyway, you get that card. It's very valuable to you. Now, maybe I get that card, and I say, I'm going to Ricky J this thing. I'm going to throw it sideways and see if I can't make it stick in that piece of fruit over there. Or whatever, a gelatinous thing. I got a jello mold set up and I got a stack of cards and I'm on a Ricky J throw them like they're kung fu stars, kung fu throwing stars. I like that. I got to it. I was taking a different form of kung fu and we didn't have kung fu throwing stars. We would just have the kung fu holding star. We just hold stars, hold the stars in our hand. It was an internal thing. We didn't throw them at anybody. They weren't sharp. They were just star. They were pure light. And we'd hold them in our hands. And we'd say, well, use that energy. I'm not going to try to throw stuff. I'm going to try to change things by the manipulation of this pure light and energy. And with the playing card. So as you can see, that thing might be useless to me. Or what if I'm building a house of cards? That every single card really is the same. It's also the same to a magician. I was watching Penn and Teller fool me. And if you've ever heard them talk about their personal beliefs, you realize that they're actually pretty easy to fool. So, but with magic, you know, maybe... that's a something that specifically, look, the thing with cards is they're kind of small and they're thin and you can hide them anywhere. And I guess that's, they do. And there was a famous, Houdini would often do things in the nude and people could, oh, it's a, very exciting. But the reason you do that is because you say, where is he, you know, where could the key possibly be? We know now that he had a whole toolbox in his anus. And he was pulling things. They go, I got all sorts of things up there, all the kind of gimmicked things. And so, you know, that's not, that doesn't count. If I Were King by Hardy White. If I were king, I would sit on a modest throne. One designed for comfort, and I would share it when people came to my house. If I were king, I would get completely naked and then put on my ermine robe and run down the hall real quick and back real quick and into my room and lock the door and giggle. If I were king, I would order room service, but I'd go down to the kitchen and help make it. And then I'd let people try on the ermine robe. And then I would let them convince me that ermine is probably not a great idea and that you should get a synthetic coat. And then I say, well, what do we do with this one? And they say, well, maybe we should bury it like remains. And I say, well, that seems a bit of a waste. You know, people tolerate having like remains up in museums and things like that. You know, you wouldn't mind if I said I have a desiccated Capuchin monk and I want to hang his remains, their skeletal and wonderful and spooky, from the chandelier or something like that. You'd say that seems perfectly appropriate. Well, I'm saying, why don't we just put this old fur coat up there and we'll admire it. All right. And then we'll let the bugs are going to eat it anyway. And it's just bug food. But we won't parade around in it. Okay, that seems a good compromise. Done. If I were king, I would have regular card games, except the cards would be non-traditional. They wouldn't have on them represented all these hierarchical things. They'd all just have one. They'd say just one. They say, how are they differentiated? And I'd say, well, it's subtle, you know, and you play long enough and then you notice. How do you keep score? You don't. Right away. You don't keep score until you can notice the differences, and that could take a lifetime. If I were king, I would go around creating all sorts of nobility, so we wouldn't just have barons and viscounts and dukes and baronesses and other things. We would make some up, and everybody might have a unique one, but you're not allowed to tell anybody because it's like a transcendental meditation mantra, and I give it to you, and it's secret. Don't tell anybody. And if you really want to know, I made everybody a count. If I were king, I would have big open feasts where I would invite everyone to eat, and I would share my wealth. Well, what if they take it all? Well, they don't want it all because in our society, we have possessions and wealth, but unprotected. What does that mean? That means you can't protect your property. Well, what is wealth undefended by violence? Well, it's just a burden and a responsibility to the community. I don't mind watching all these resources and things. If they do need defending, like by outside marauders, everybody will, you know, come and gather around. But I stay the king because you're welcome to come in anytime and take, oh, I don't know. I don't want to promote any one brand, but I'd say like a Little Debbie or a Tasty Cake. And there's a supply of both all the time. You can take that or any. We have other staples. We have literal staples and we have the kind that you can live on. And the office supply chain. We have little tiny models of it. If you want to pretend you're, I'm going to build a franchise. Because I don't want to do anything like that, but I'd love to go to the meetings. I've always thought that. It's, I want to be in business, but I don't want there to be any stakes. Is there some sort of camp I can go to where we just pretend we're executives? Well, let's get the numbers on building that new office building, and I would like to get a very famous architect to do it because I would love our new corporate offices to reflect our values, and since we want our employees to be comfortable, stuff like that. So you get an architect that recognizes human beings, and then they build some kind of workspace where you all feel like you're in on it together. We would do that, and that's not reality. I'm just describing the camp. That's the camp day one, then we break for lunch, and you can have any sort of sandwich you want, or you can bring it from home. A lot of say, hey, my mom makes the best. So you can bring your own then. We're not going to force some kind of camp food on you. Not everybody has the same dietary needs. And we also have campers of different species. And they certainly don't eat to say, oh, you know, that's a vegan dog. No, well, it would be a very skinny dead one maybe because they would say, I like a little bacon. You have to give dog a little bacon sometimes. The pigs don't like that. But then, you know, the pigs in where I'm from have, you know, jobs
and things and have really good lives. And we don't eat them, you know. The dogs do, and we kind of look the other way. Oh, bless your heart. What are you saying? I'm saying I'm the king, and I'm going to say, well, I don't agree with that. And go, well, we'll talk about it. That's the good thing about this kingdom. I'm not taking it off the table. You know, we work things out together. Oh, it's difficult to do that. It's difficult to do that. It's easier to have, like, really strict rules, like in cards. Imagine if every single hand you had to think, okay, does this really, you know, who benefits, who loses? It's a lot of work to think things through. It's a lot of work. You know, when we play chess or something like that, we know through the research of writers like Adrian de Groot and his seminal Thought and Choice in Chess, 1964, that we play chess by thinking about stuff and what's the consequences and then making decisions. It's really breakthrough stuff. But you see, you have kind of morality in doing the right thing, I think, is the same way. It can be very complicated. It's not very complicated. It's just black and white. It isn't, though. It isn't. Just like the right and wrong move in chess just really depends. And how much harm. You can have things like saying, well, I'm trying not to do any harm. All right. Well, that's a good rule. Now, everything else is difficult. Because how do I go about that? And you say, I'm exhausted by thinking about the consequences of my behavior. Isn't there some shortcut where I can just go, like, declare myself a good person and then everything I do is okay? Or something like that? Or you could create a king and I can just be obedient to the king and then I don't have to think at all, just do what I'm told. And that'd be much easier to be told what to wear every morning. Oh, my goodness, these decisions. How do I think things that are difficult and make it bearable? See, there are people that enjoy playing chess. For me, it would be very difficult because I'd think, oh, this is killing my brain. But it really can be enjoyable. And it can be enjoyable to think about the consequences of your behavior. And say, hey, am I hurting anybody? And I know that it's also very tempting to say, to exonerate yourself ahead of time and say, yes, I'm hurting, but, and then come up with some very lovely creative excuses. But they also require some wonderful thinking. We are all writers. Everybody is writing a poem called If I Were King, or If I Were Queen, or one called I am queen or I am king. That's fine too. That's the same. And then you describe who you are. But you also have to describe your knaveness. Am I the knave? Now, the knave in these poems went both ways. Sometimes an advocate for justice. Sometimes the perpetrator of sin. Sometimes the knave is causing harm. Sometimes the knave is solving problems. So not clear there. And they don't even mention the Joker's just standing on the side because the Joker has no suit. Does it? There's a red Joker and a black Joker. I know that from playing spades. Because you twos and Jokers, right? Yes. Is that all right?
Yes.
Who does the spades and the whist? Who does the whist column for your local paper?
There is no local paper.
There's no local paper. There's no bridge column. There's no horoscope column. There's no comic strip. Is there? Well, I mean, they exist. They exist out there, not on paper. But I remember every morning saying,
Mama, fold open the paper to the funny section.
And she'd say, why are you talking in that accent? I go, because I'm really, like, there's so much country comedy on right now. It's hard not to. And she said, all right. And she'd open the paper and fold it open, and there'd be a word jumble or a compare two pictures. What to spot the differences. And a lot of us got very good at it. spotting those differences, word jumble stuff. They do a similar exercise on severance. That's what they do for a living. Say, which is that the right number? Does that go there? Hand repositioned on railing. Star missing on flag. And we look at those things. And we look at the funnies. I remember that as a child. And they made an impression on me. And they also made an impression on my Play-Doh. Because we would take a ball of a Play-Doh, the color of white people's skin, and we'd smush it onto the newspaper. And because the newspaper is very low-quality paper and the ink is inky, you would get a print. You get there. There it is. I've got this Play-Doh, wonderful thing. I think it was originally invented to take the backs off of watches, like the green ball. Say, hey, this is it's got some grip to it. Or I don't know, maybe it's, I always, so I really literally thought when I was a kid that it was also flubber, because there was a movie called Flubber. I think it was called Flubber. And is about some person invented a rubber that you could fly, flying rubber. And I guess they were going to call it flying rubber, and there was a porn already. So I don't know whether where ideas come from. You know, a thing can be conceived one way. The Slinky was originally made by NASA to do laser beam sound effects. So they'd say, we need a Slinky to get the, we're going to take two cups, connect the Slinky between two cups, stretch it out, flick it with our finger, and pew, 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 pew. And they invented that. And then somebody was like, let go of their cup, and it went, and the spring went flying, and it hit the stairs at NASA. Shadunk, 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 shadunk. They stood there with their mouths open, agape, or agape, as we would say, which means Greek love. They were in love with one another and with also with the idea of that Slinky having more than one purpose, something so important, the very foundation of NASA's mission, which is to make space stuff, space sounds and all. And here it is, a toy. Same with Play-Doh. Isn't that weird? Lincoln Logs were conceived of as a weapon. And then you go, so I can make little houses, little cabins with them. But originally, I think they were for something else. I might be thinking of the Erector Set. It might be the Erector Set. I remember injuring myself on that sharp metal they used to give to children. Say, hey, can you make something with these tiny little screws and these little sharp metal L-beams or something? Say, yeah, I'd love to. I'd love to try. And I got two eyes, so I've got one to spare in case I fall onto this. And you could make wonderful things that just look like the Inside Out building in London. And that was made by an actual architect. What are they teaching at Yale? Architecture still, I think. Oh, are you interested in the buildings that you live in? Say, I wish that I lived in a bank or something designed by Eero Saarinen. That's the son. The father's also an architect. And say, I would look out on those glassy windows, all windows are glass. Well, I mean, you know what I mean? Unrestricted view out of that beautiful open space there. I like to think about spaces. I wish my house, I live in one of those suburban houses that was just designed by people with no imagination. And I feel like with extra dose of cynicism and resignation, we're all going to have a great, this is a house. The grand dining rooms of the suburban house. I love that there's a dining room. It's a formal dining room, as you know, because you need that if Mr. Tate comes over and you got to say, the boss is coming, prepare the formal dining room. Usually a formal dining room, you can't really get all of the chairs pulled out from the table without hitting a wall. I've noticed that. Very few people have a dining room that's actually large enough where, you know, you can get, I mean, if there has to be a child's table, can you really call it a formal dining room? Because it's, you know, my goodness, everybody, I'm like a millionaire, but smaller. Thousandaire? Yeah, not real. I mean, like, attitude millionaire. Actual funds, hundreds. This is our banquet hall. It just is, it has to be, it's, you know, 12 by 10 or whatever. That's okay. That's still pretty big. My goodness. Our ancestors get a family of 50 in there. There's old tenement houses. They didn't have dining rooms, did they? Oh, my goodness. They'd say, we got an ironing board. That's our bed, our table, our you know, anything that requires a flat surface. We turn it upside down, and it's the upside down table or whatever you use that for. Hang clothes on it. Talk to it. It's our counselor. It's our pastor. The old ironing board, it's everything to us. It's our pet. We take it for walks, put a little rope around its neck and take it down to the park and drag it around. And there's the other abject poor out there from the tenements. This was back in the day. I'm talking about this is the 19th century, early 20th. And I don't want things to be like gangs in New York say, do you want chaos or something? We're just roaming street gangs. And I would say, like, let's take something like gangs in New York, right? And let's not throw the baby out with the bathwater, because those costumes. I mean, I'd roll with any one of those groups. Any kind of your shirt's like absurdly long. Yeah, I love it. I love that. I'll do that. Big old hat group. Now, the violence, I think that's counterproductive. I think we all lose. So there's got to be other ways of, this some sort of cooperative situation. And yes, we could totally do that. That's fine. I think it's doable. You lack imagination if you think it isn't. Are you used to, oh gosh, what do we do with those kings? What do we do with our kings? Well, you know, if you make up a different game, if the game changes and their value changes, I mean, they don't have to be at the top of the point order. And I don't think, like, what if you're playing with, sometimes I play Scopa or something like that, or something where you use, like, an Italian deck of cards or a Sicilian deck of cards. And, I mean, yeah, do they have royalty on them? Yeah, but I forget that, you know? I'd kind of disregard that. And there are cards you can get that don't have, that don't represent humans and everything. What do you mean? Well, I live in the state of Kentucky. And in the state of Kentucky, we have a tradition of some very religious people, Pentecostal people. And, they don't believe in a lot of things, card playing at all, really. But if you are going to play cards, then there's no face cards. And so they've got this game called Rook. And Rook is like also sort of a whist-based game and with bidding. But Rook just has the number cards. Just all numbers. There's no people on them. I like Rook. And I'm sorry to say Johnny Depp has a tattoo of the Rook card game logo on him. So that doesn't make me want to play Rook. That shouldn't dissuade you. There's lots of people have tattoos of anchors on them and say, I don't want to use an anchor when I go sailing. Well, you know, that's up to you. But, you know, what somebody else does with a symbol is really, you can't control that. I was thinking about that. You know who has a tattoo of you, Hardy? Oh, God, I don't even want to know. Who? The guy. Oh, no. Yeah. Oh.
Well, I mean, there's something he likes about your show. Well, I want him to.
I don't know. That might be true with celebrities. Nobody has a tattoo of me. I had a friend that asked me to design a tattoo, and that friend died before I could do it. So that didn't. Is it too late? I'm thinking yes, but so that didn't happen. But I wonder about that. What would I tattoo on myself? A mirror. Well, that's not possible. Then I probably won't get it done, because I'd love to be able to look down and say, I know it'd be very painful to have a tattoo on the palm of your hand, and I'm not sure many people do or would or should, but if I could get a mirror, well, they have hand mirrors, like pocket mirrors, like you could get a compact. I could do that. You know what? I didn't even think of that. I didn't even think of that. They got compacts. They got the tiny mirrors, don't they? I bet that's what the killer did. That's a Columbo moment. That's right. We do have tiny mirrors like that. I have many incidents where I invent something that's been around for a very long time, but it just dawns on me or something. I go, what if? And then that's either I manifested it by thinking it, or it was already there. Maybe a combination. Who knows? But that happens a lot. I've reinvented so many things, and I can see from social media that many, many people believe that they may be the origin of a long-established idea. And that's beautiful. And I keep going. Keep going. But that happens too. And I can see that. There is no other way to experience your life than through your own eyes and brain. It's confounding. And when you go to embrace more and say, well, am I the universe, or am I everyone, or am I all living life? It's very difficult to feel that authentically. Say, well, I don't quite feel like all rhinoceroses. And yet I can acknowledge intellectually that we are probably all, life is all kind of one thing, and we are connected. It's not even super invisible, really. You know, we're really connected. But I am trapped in this perspective, this one view, a very narrow view, as if there are a million eyes and I'm but one eye aimed in a particular direction and told, hey, you look that way and just tell us what you see. And I don't know who's gathering all this information, but they want me and expect me to do some little job here. Now, that seems to me to be a kind of governing principle. I have no control over that one force, the force that brought me into existence, that drives my consciousness, whatever it is, the thing that brings life to all, whatever it is. That seems to be my only suit card, you know, my only royal card. I just have that one ace, that one singularity. And I know that has authority over me. But the parts of it, not so sure. I am no king, but I am also no pawn. What are you? I don't know. Are you the board? I'm not the board. Are you pawn felt? Am I pawn felt? Are you the felt? You know how some pieces have like felt? Oh, the weighted felt pieces? Yes. I am weighted and felt. Why is a straw hat like a kiss over the telephone? I don't know. Why is a straw hat like a kiss over the telephone? Because it's not felt. That's right. Bless you, all of you. And thank you, Joe Penner, for that. Tell us, Uncle Hardy, who was Joe Penner? Well, he's way before my time. I'll tell you that right now. I imagine it's like, can you imagine somebody explaining Pee Wee Herman to somebody years from now? Somebody who's never even, who was born now, like after Paul Rubens died. and say, yes, I know, quite. Let me tell you about Pee-wee Herman. And they're the one telling you about Pee-wee Herman. I feel that way sometimes with Joe Penner. Let me tell you about Joe Penner. You know, he was a star in the 30s, briefly a comic star, and I know about him because they did caricatures of him on Warner Brothers cartoons during that period when they do caricatures of everybody who was famous. And he was also famous for a catchphrase, and it was one of the early kind of catchphrases that everybody knew, and it was, do you want to buy a duck? And it's really stupid. And Joe Penner said, do you want to buy a duck? And you think, God, you know, for 2 years in the 30s, that was comedy gold. Do you want to buy a duck? You know, you want to buy a duck? People having strokes. What am I? This guy wants me to buy a duck. I don't get it, you know, but gosh, it moved people then. And then it all kind of ended for old Joe that got, you know, got old. A lot of his vocal mannerisms, as I have said over and over, have endured.
You nasty man.
Like that.
Hello, mother.
That kind of thing.
I don't know.
So that's a fun voice to do and irritating. I have certain friends that when I do specific impressions, mainly like that, like Joe Penner and others, really, really start to have the hatred in their eyes. So I would say if you're kind of a nerdy, show-offy, performy type, get that, do like Joe Penner or something like that, or Baby Snooks, and just go around doing Baby Snooks for people. And you're really, I feel like it's a zen thing. I think attracting people, putting them off is as important to me spiritually as making friends. Not making enemies, but just like having people look at you like you're a fart. And I think that that is important. And it's, you know, because we really are, sometimes I say, oh, self-love, we don't love each other, we love ourselves enough. And that is very true. But at the same time, we are little royalty to ourselves.
I'm a little prince.
And everyone has that tendency. We see it sometimes in our leaders, you know.
Show your bottom to me.
The kind of like Caligula-like, infantilism, self-centeredness that we all have. The evil king, bad king, bad king.
I'm sorry.
Why did you eat that cookie? That's not for the puppies.
I'm sorry.
It had chocolate in it. If it was a higher quality chocolate, it could have killed you.
I said I'm sorry.
That's my new dog king. No, I don't have a new dog king. I have just one dog now. My dog Orwell died of old age. And I have one dog left. And my cat died of old age. And I have one old dog named Cookie now. And Cookie is fun and fluffy and arthritic. And so we share that. So I can't get on the bed either, Cookie. I love my dog. Will not be... has a really hard time jumping up on the bed, but also refuses help. And I love that. That's the cantankerous elder that I grew up with. And because if you can't, I mean, at the point, let me struggle. The struggle's the struggle. I like to, you know, I need a little bit of it. Keeps me engaged. I have to have challenges. And Star Trek knows this. They know this. Look at these idle people, Star Trek says sometimes. Kirk, looking at those space hippies, goes, see, they're dissolute? Is that dissolute? Something like that? Is that what you just like? They're decadent? They're degenerate? That all sounds great to me. You're describing like the ultimate art scene for me, but I guess that's also like Star Trek doesn't like that because they want some conflict. So I can see that. We understand that. I got strong opinions about that, about strife and everything. I believe that if you lived in a paradise where everybody, or at least the people, were all compassionate and beautiful, there would still be hardship. You know, there'd still be hurricanes, and there'd still be volcanoes, and there'd still be wild beasts. But if you removed other human beings as a threat, and if they were actually partners in your survival instead of enemies, a source of grief, then the other things would be bearable, I believe. You know, I believe that what makes life unbearable is our inhumanity to one another. And I see this in a lot of, you know, I have friends that are involved in work that takes them into some grim spaces. So people that are facing challenges that are part of them are natural, but they're compounded by injustice and man's inhumanity to man, mankind, peoplekind, whatever one word you want to use, all of us culpable. And I think, gosh, if you just took that away, people would still die. There'd still be disease, but you couldn't imagine if we weren't being cruel and torturing people as they died, you know, and making things harder for them. That is reality. And what a wonderful... And I don't think any of it is very far-fetched. It just requires a card game. A shuffle. Taking the deck and changing it. Saying we don't have to play whist. We could play any number of games. Or we should design one maybe together that best suits our needs. Something that's both entertaining and engaging. And what game would that be? Or maybe we should just make a house of cards out of it and not even have a card game. Or solitaire? Or what else can you do with cards? I'll tell you what you can do. You can take that playing card and you can take a clothespin. Not the kind without a spring. It's got to be the spring kind of clothespin. What? There's the old-style clothespin that's just a piece of wood that looks like a person with just a head and long legs. Yeah, not that one. The kind of 50s spring one with a spring, clippy-clip. Yeah, that kind of clothespin. You take that. Can it be the plastic kind, the new kind that's plastic? Absolutely. It just has to be a clippy. And you clip that playing card onto your bicycle so that your spokes will hit the playing card. And I learned this from professional bike racers, do this to make it sound like it's a, intimidate the other riders. So you're coming up on them, you know, and they hear, what is that? And it's a card. I wish I could do the effect. I wish there was a playing card within distance of my hand. I know what I have. Oh, gosh. You can't see this, so you just have to believe me. So a couple years back, I bought a unopened box of Twin Peaks collectible cards from the 90s. And it was unopened, and they're like a bunch of cards with pictures of the stars on them, and some of them were signed, so you don't know which boxes of cards have signed pictures in them and which don't, especially if they're sealed. Now, I could have gotten tricked, and the seal could have been fake, but it was all shrink wrapped and everything looked all right. I had no autographs in mine. But I still have the cards. I know what pack number it is too, so I can actually kind of probably look it up and see if I got tricked or not. Could have been pulled out of there, resealed and sold. But I have these cards now, and I can prove it. Oh, do you hear that? So that's what you would hear going by on the bicycle. Say, here comes a bike rider, and it would sound something like this. That's him passing you. And the card that I was, is Lucy Moran. And that's whose card I was doing that with. And but I could have done it here with this Jean Renault one. And any of them make the same sound, even though they have different people on them. So the one that the card that has Bob on it sounds exactly like the one that has Cooper on it. Think about that for a minute. Cards all sound alike on the radio. You can't tell. You don't know who I am. Who's this disembodied voice? Who's this Hardy White? I know I'm listening to this. I just started listening to your Dear Hardy. I haven't been listening that long, but I am intrigued the way I would be if they were building some kind of new franchise store on my route to work, and I'd see it built a little every day, and I'd say, I'm intrigued by what's, I wonder what's going in there. That's what I feel like when I'm listening to your show. It gives me something to look forward to every day, the progress on the store. I just hope it's not one of those chains that are not very good at all. Those fast food chains that when they first open, they're highly touted and you think it's going to be good. And you say, well, this one will be different. This is a different chain. This is from another state. They're supposed to have really good sandwiches. Yeah, I heard they're supposed to have soup. Oh, really? I heard it's going to be really good soup. And then it opens up and it's just mediocre garbage the way everything else is. So I was surprised to find after listening to your show for a while that it's like one of these cafes where the signage doesn't exactly match the things you serve. And that a lot of times the menu reflects the whims of the chef and not any particular theme, especially the restaurants that are cynical and they have menu items that reflect whatever how the wind blows, the culinary wind, what the trends are. Yep, I went to a restaurant not long ago that was serving this bacon, bourbon, honey glazed bacon. They serve it in a cup, like as an appetizer, like sticking up out of a cup, where you put your paintbrushes, except they're bacon, really thick, stiff bacon strips. I'm not going to do that to you. And you know that. That's why you wrote me and say, I'm listening to the show now. And I thought, you know, and at first it's hard to listen to somebody speaking an hour. Good God, really? I don't think I can follow it, especially I don't know that is it just a sort of rambling? No. How could it be? It's about playing cards. It's about kings and queens. It's about for when our kings will do such things, they should be made to smart. Don't let that card game wreck your life. Toss those cards around. Make them the raw material for your new world. Build something out of them. Use them as characters the way sort of creepy math guy did when he wrote the story about the little girl hallucinating. They can fire our imagination, but they can also motivate our whole lives, these cards. Well, say that. We say, what's in the cards, right? I guess that's referring to tarot. I like to, I'm going to do the tarot deck, but with the Twin Peaks cards. So you got Bob, but it's not necessarily bad. Sometimes Bob just means transformation. There's a change coming. Like that. So, you know, it's in the interpretation, isn't it? It's all in the interpersonal stuff. I love you so much. I get around people and my heart gets tender. I have a easier time being imagining my cruelty than putting it into effect, because when I'm with people, I feel tender and I feel merciful, and I pick up on your love and your fear of other. Please be in touch with other human beings and understand them, and might be right there in their face. Let them see your face and say, "What are you going to do about this card? What are you going to do about this card?" You are listening to Miracle Nutrition
with Hardy White on WFMU East Orange, WMFU Mount Hope, 91.9 in Rockland County, and online at WFMU.org. Worldwide freeform radio, the way you expect it to be, and it is there. And I say, stay tuned for Mahogany. Love y'all. See you next week. We'll be right back.